WGN Radio, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hold on, my headphones just caught my button. I'm wearing a jaunty blazer. Tom Gimbel joins us, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Are you wearing a jaunty blazer, Tom?
I'm not wearing a jaunty blazer nor a jaunty hat, but I can't wait to see yours.
We're actually shooting a video later today. It'll appear, I think, on Channel 9 around Thanksgiving time to promote our virtual kettle for the Salvation Army or something like that.
I love it.
So I'm looking my holiday best. Let's talk about the layoffs in the tech sector. I thought that Amazon was hiring at the same time they're firing. And Lord knows we know what Elon Musk's companies are going through. What's going on here?
Well, we're sitting in a situation, John, where interest rates have gone from zero from the Fed up to over 300 basis points, and that means that money isn't free anymore. So you've got a lot of companies that either weren't profitable or never had been profitable or were on the verge of going that way, and the money isn't free anymore, and you sit there and you say, how can we do this? We're getting into a bigger hole, and they've laid people off, and sometimes When you join a rocket ship, that's the term people like to use, you know, sometimes rocket ships don't make it back safely to Earth, John.
Well, what companies are we talking about, though? I mean, Amazon is an established company.
Well, there's established and they're successful, and then there's growing too fast or adding too many people. Amazon isn't going to go anywhere. Facebook isn't going to go anywhere. But when they lay off tens of thousands of people, the message is clear that they're running a business. And in good economies, that means bring people on by the truckload. And in bad economies, buyer beware. You made a decision to go there. And let's face it, whether it's a tech company or in the old days it was Exxon or General Motors or Boeing or United Airlines, is that big companies hire a lot of people, yeah, and they let go of a lot of people.
Yeah, that's obvious, but that point's resonating with me. That is clearly a company that can let go of 3,700 employees like Twitter did, or Amazon, it's 10,000, must have many more thousand, let's exclude Twitter from this conversation, to still do the work that they do. And it tends to be job-specific, doesn't it? Because Amazon is, at the same time, hiring for the holidays, right?
Exactly. What it comes down to, you're exactly right. Twitter laid off half their staff, and they're still in business. The tweets are still coming through. So you look at companies and you realize, wow, A, they had a lot of initiatives going on that they had people there for future plans or future growth, and B, the fact that they had a lot of fat build up there, and you don't need it. And that is what happens with companies. In a good economy, you add staff, and you give people a little bit of a break, and you have five people doing the work of four.
Well, then
things get tough. That ratio changes.
Sure. And I appreciate the fact that companies have to do what companies do, I think. But just talk to me a little bit about then. I'm a recently laid off employee from one of these companies. What's my prospect?
Hold on, John.
What?
And I know we come at it from different sides sometimes, but you say you think you understand why companies do it. Well, how many months ago, a year ago, was it that we were having conversations about employees quitting for not having a job someplace else because the economy was so good? Why was that okay?
All I'm saying is that I think that this notion that you treat people like a number the way Elon Musk did is probably not the best way to run a business.
Well, the best way to run a business and the morally right way to treat people may not always be the same thing.
I think that's what I was trying to say, and I guess it just depends on what your perspective or prerogative is, what's more important to you.
Exactly right. But the situation is, everybody, before he did the layoffs, people were on Twitter saying, you know, these employees should quit, and we don't agree with him letting Trump back on, and all these things. And then somebody calls your bluff. And I'm not saying this is all 3,700 people, but, you know, sometimes if you're going to say some things and people are going to blow up the internet with, this isn't right that he's even getting the company and letting people back on. Well, guess what? That ended up being the least of people's fears, who was broadcasting on Twitter, and more about whether you were going to have a job. And sometimes you got to look around at the landscape and say, you know, how strong are my convictions, and would I really quit over them? Because sometimes when you bluff, the other person's going to have a bigger bluff, And you might not want to get in that shooting match.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point. We're going to have to close on that, Tom. I'm out of time today. I know there's more for you and I to talk about what happens to those employees after they're laid off. That'll be our next conversation, but it's good to hear what you had to say about this today.
Absolutely, John. Have a great holiday. Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble. Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalleNetwork.com. So Bob Kessler tells us that the Dow has touched 34. It was at 1.39. We got down to 29. So Barty Scott, senior editor at BusinessInsider.com, it looks to me like we're almost exactly splitting the difference here. We've gained half back of what we've lost on that index. Is the glass half full or half empty today, Barty?
Well, today may be a tough full, but I would say looking at the longer term, there's a lot of fear that the stock market is going to really hit a lull. This is after decades of outsized massive growth where everyone wanted to put their money into the stock market. That was the best returns you could get. And a lot of experts are now saying that kind of the party is over. And there's going to be a lot of reckoning coming to the stock market.
So there's going to be a pullback again, huh?
That's what we're hearing from experts, yes.
What's the timeline on that?
Oh, good question. I mean, I typically cover the economy more than the stock market, which are two very different things, believe it or not. But it looks like, you know, we've already seen a slowdown from the outsized growth over the last decade. And it's, you know, perhaps we're already starting to be on a downward trend.
So let's talk a little bit about the economy then and the Fed's impact on that. It seems like everybody's banking on 0.5% in December. Is that what we continue to expect?
That's right. That's the signals we're getting from the Fed. Of course, they're very coy about their signals, but experts are interpreting some comments and economic data to mean that we'll see a little bit of the slowdown in rate hikes that we've seen over the last several months in December, and probably it will be 50 basis points.
And so here's a question you can't or don't want to answer. So will that be a good thing or a bad thing, 50 basis points? Would it be better if they kept the pedal on it and made 75 basis point increases in a row, or is 50 the right choice?
So a lot of economists that were hoping for a soft landing from the Fed's rate hikes, which means that the Fed is successful in cooling inflation but doesn't tank the job market, they think that the latest data is showing that actually maybe could happen. You know, we're still seeing a strong jobs market, and inflation has definitely showed signs of cooling off. And so the idea that the Fed might pull back a little bit is a good thing. You know, obviously that means that interest rates won't get even higher for people who are feeling a lot of pain when it comes to taking out a mortgage or paying their credit card or car loans.
Talk to me a little bit about the supply lines and what's happening in China. There's I wouldn't call it another outbreak of COVID, but COVID continues to maybe dampen the production in China. So what's the expectation there?
Yeah, China has really been sort of an unreliable piece of the supply chain for us for a while now. And I think that's going to kick off a longer term trend of what they call nearshoring, which is, you know, bringing manufacturing and supply chains closer to home so that the U.S. has a little more control over it. But that's further out. Right now, though, it does look like supply chain issues that we've seen over the last 2 years have slowly worked themselves out. A lot of them, in addition to having to do with China, also had to do with a labor shortage. Of course, COVID outbreaks all over the world. But it looks like those are actually smoothing out a little bit more. And that's one of the signs that's pointing toward inflation cooling off.
What are you hearing about the fourth quarter and holiday spending as it affects the economy? What's the forecast, or what are we seeing right now?
One little mystery in the economy right now is that consumers are still spending a lot. We're still shopping and buying things, even though, you know, interest rates have gone up and a lot of debt, like credit cards, have gotten more expensive for people. You know, this could be because of savings people still might have from where they built up over the pandemic, or they paid down debt during the pandemic. But consumer spending is looking good. A lot of company earnings are looking good. What you'll hear, though, from CEOs when they come out with their earnings reports is some pessimism about the future. However, you know, they see that a recession could be coming in 2023, and they're kind of bracing themselves and their investors for that.
And what's the difference between now and then? If we do get to the recession, which is what, two consecutive quarters of negative growth, how is life different in January than it is in November?
Well, I want to be clear about the definition of a recession because, yes, what you said is the technical definition of a recession. But for a long time now, economists have relied on a little bit more nuanced definition of when our economy is actually in a recession. They look at a bunch of different data points, including the job market, including spending, to see, you know, they want to see like a widespread slowdown in all of those things. And so far, economists are not saying that that's happening yet. But it could, it's definitely still a possibility, you know, in the coming months in 2023, although most economists are expecting it to be a relatively mild recession. Like I was talking before, as long as inflation doesn't go up more and the job market continues to be good, then some Americans, a lot of Americans could get out of it unscathed or at least a low amount of pain.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. In fact, if inflation has peaked, maybe prices after the turn in the year will actually continue to go down. Maybe the market will stay above 34,000 or something like that. So I'm wondering, where do I see the most acute impact? If I'm carrying a big balance on a credit card, that's not going to go away in a hurry. But I'm just wondering how painful or different it would be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, when we talk about inflation, we're not talking about prices going down, just growing at a slower rate. You know, our economy is all about constant growth. So
yeah,
we do want to see that happening.
Yeah.
But I would say that the pain, like you said, is in holding debt. You know, we've been seeing a big increase in people being delinquent on their credit card payments and on their car loans. And being in a lot of debt is not a great position to be in while interest rates are pretty high, relatively high right now. So that's going to be painful as long as they stay that way. And, you know, the Fed's not hardly ever going to cut interest rates immediately by a large amount. So this higher level of interest rates are going to stick around for a while. You could also see a little bit of discomfort in the job market without it being, you know, high unemployment. It could still mean that people aren't going to be switching jobs as much as they have over the last year or two, and they're not going to be seeing as much of a raise when they do so.
Barty Scott writes about the economy. She's a senior editor, businessinsider.com. Barty, interesting. Nice to talk to you today. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman's your producer. Dennis Rodkin is a return visitor, the residential real estate reporter at craneschicagobusiness.com. Dennis and I have decided not to talk about real estate, but how to do Thanksgiving properly. And there are many ways to do it. You can cook a turkey and all of the stuffing. You can go to a restaurant, which my family has traditionally done. We stopped doing it during the pandemic, and now with a granddaughter, we're tending to stay in. So that's a special kind of chaos. And then there's the go just buy a nice cooked meal and eat it in your home would be another way to do it.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to do. It's there are enough people and enough moving parts. Just bring it in, order from the right place. It's from a couple of places because desserts here, food there. And less stress. You know, we used to cook for multiple generations. Family flew in from, and it was just so much stress.
Well, I know that we're going to have a great time. We're going to have a great meal. But as Brenda and I were making multiple trips to multiple stores over the past few days, it's like this lesson you have to learn every year all over again, where we go, wait, what are we doing? This is so much work. It's so much stress and pressure and money. And it's like Brenda goes, a restaurant wouldn't be a terrible idea right now. And even if we brought restaurant quality food in, that's us. Maybe I'll do that next year.
I will remind you next October.
Well, that's the problem, because in September we'll say, hey, we'll host. You go, then you need to come over to my house with a stick.
Yeah, exactly. I will. So a question, John, are you going to wear that nice suit for the nice suit you have on today for Thanksgiving?
It's not a suit. It has been described on this radio station today as a jaunty blazer.
Ah, are you going to wear that jaunty blazer and tie for Thanksgiving?
I just might. I do dress up a little bit. Since our tradition was to go to Lowry's until they closed during the pandemic,
right.
And we did that for a dozen years, every year, we'd all put on our Thanksgiving best. So now I still kind of throw on a jacket and an appropriate shirt. What are you going to wear?
Probably an appropriate shirt, but I doubt a jacket.
It's 12:39. Okay, now we have to do what you're here for. You ready?
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the housing market. Here's a headline from ChicagoBusiness.com, and it's your byline. Two good reasons not to worry about a big home price drop in Chicago. What are you talking about?
Well, the primary one is it's been parsed in several parts, but just the idea that our prices did not rise so far out of the affordability range like a lot of other cities, that it just doesn't seem as if there's as much air inflated into that. So there isn't as much to come out. Affordability, the cost of a typical house went up about 40% in the Chicago area during the course of the boom. And in some cities, it went up 75, 100%, which is just a reason to think that should a downturn happen, it probably won't be as hard here. Which is not to say there won't be a downturn and there won't be a downturn here, or not to say there will be a downturn or that there won't be a downturn here, just to say we seem a little better prepared. We also have a far larger proportion of people who own their homes in full, whose mortgages are paid off.
Really?
There are several other indicators. Our prices have not started going down. Our prices have continued to tick along at about flat compared to a year ago, while in other cities they have been seeing price declines. So all in all, it just looks as if we may be insulated against a big shock if a big shock comes.
You have a ballpark figure what percentage of people own their own homes outright?
I had it in my story.
In this one?
Yeah.
Let me double check. Nationwide, 34% of homeowners have no mortgage.
And in Chicago, it's
41%?
It's 30%.
30%.
But what was interesting about that is that
30%.
Of the top of the biggest cities with a lot of paid off homes, we're the only one not in the Sun Belt. There are a lot of retirees in the Florida, Las Vegas, Arizona markets that were on this list with a high proportion of paid off mortgages. The place with the highest proportion of paid off mortgages is in Manhattan, but they have a very, very small number of ownership homes. Most people, two-thirds of people in Manhattan are renters. So we have, just in terms of raw numbers, we have more homes fully owned, fully paid for than any other city.
What's the takeaway from that? Why do we do that? How is it? That sounds like a good thing for Chicago.
Well, one of the theories I have is, you know, we still have that working class 1970s, 1980s sort of attitude that you pay off your home and you stay in it.
And we have a lot of quality bungalows, which a family would want to stay in for a long period of time.
Where you can age in place. But the other is that our home prices have not gone, this is a more negative one, our home prices have not gone up so much that as a retiree, you can sell, get a big nut to put on the next home.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in San Francisco where prices are skyrocketing, you could sell and move to another place. There's a gap. It's harder to afford your next step as a senior citizen. So I think there may be, this is a theory, I don't have data on this, I think there may be more people who are in because they can't afford the next big step.
Nationwide, 34% of homeowners have no mortgage. It's about 30% in Chicago. I've owned a car before. I don't know that I'll ever own a home. That sounds so fantastic.
Paying off your mortgage in 30 years, really. I mean, that was sort of, I don't know about your parents, but that was our parents' generation ideal, right?
Sure.
And then you own it and if you're living on a fixed income, all you're paying is property taxes. And certainly we have a lot of people still doing that. I wouldn't have known that it was 30%.
You know, we were talking about that, my wife and I, about the people who'd paid off their homes in Indiana. I just know some folks in Indiana did this anecdotally and then took all of that equity, moved to Florida, retired there, bought a home with cash with no insurance because the insurance was too expensive, and then a hurricane wipes them out.
Oh.
And now they have nothing. And disaster relief money does not replace your house. I don't know what those people do now. But I would say if... cautionary tale. Don't buy that house then if you can't afford the insurance.
That was a gamble, yeah. And essentially they were gambling with a lifetime of home equity built up.
Ugh.
And it must have felt great that we can buy our house in Florida for cash.
Where the taxes are so low,
yeah.
And it's warm, and I understand the attractions, but you don't get something for nothing. And
exactly.
Therein lies
right.
The risk. I want to talk to you about home sales. I want to talk to you about the big Hollywood name that sold a home in Lake Forest for $13 million and the Come Home plan with Dennis Rodkin. He's the real estate, the residential real estate expert. The Wintrust Business Lunch continues now. This is Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. With the holiday shopping season upon us, the CEO of Best Buy expects you to spend more money this year. Corey Berry believes that'll hold true on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Best Buy's quarterly earnings came in better than expected, boosting its outlook for the season. Holiday shipping could be serious derailed if a strike by railroad workers happens next month. One of the biggest rail unions rejected its deal yesterday over demanding schedules and lack of paid sick time. If it happens, the American Association of Railroads estimates it would cost the economy $2 billion a day. A new Ryan Field Stadium at Northwestern could be a huge economic boost. The Tribune says a study found an upgraded facility could bring in over $1 billion to Cook and Lake counties within 10 years and up to 9,000 jobs. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
And now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and here we go. Take it away, Pooh.
Hooray, hooray, today is the day.
Well, no, it's actually Thursday.
To give thanks for giving and give thanks away.
And if you're not careful, it's...
How to ruin your turkey and make your friends and family sick.
Yeah, it's one of the most dangerous times of the year when it comes to food. And we'll hear about a chihuahua that crawled inside a Thanksgiving turkey. But first, we're thankful to be sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com.
Well, I think it's a joyful time of year, right? There's a lot of joyful chaos when big families get together.
Michael Waltz is medical director of the Illinois Poison Center, which gets a lot of calls about holiday food poisoning because...
people get distracted and mistakes happen in the preparation of food.
Dr. Waltz says there are four main ways to keep from poisoning your family and friends.
Clean, separate, cook to the right temperature, and... chill, you know, as soon as everyone is done eating.
A meat thermometer is highly recommended. 165 is the target for the turkey. And here's a warning about the stuffing. I recall my mom year after year cooking the stuffing in the cavity of the turkey. No. The Illinois poison experts say do not do that.
Just because it's hard to get that internal cavity to 165, and you don't want to overcook the breast and the thighs and the other areas.
And remember to pull that bag of spare parts out of the turkey before you cook it. There's a lot more safety info on the Illinois Poison Center's website, or you can just call them.
1-800-222-1222. We're staffed by nurses and pharmacists 24/7, 365. 1-800-222-1222.
And no question is too bizarre, such as when a frantic new mom hosting her first Thanksgiving called in a panic after her chihuahua climbed onto the kitchen counter and into the turkey and was stuck. The Poison Center nurse told her to pull really hard and yank the little guy out. IllinoisPoisonCenter.org has all the safety tips. Be careful and have a happy Thanksgiving.
We'll gather together and share all our treats. I'm sure there'll be plenty of honey to eat.
That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
So let's talk a little bit about the Hughes House. What is the Hughes House and what's happened there?
It sold very quickly for $12.9 million. Nancy Hughes was, she died a few years ago, but when she bought the house, she was the widow of John Hughes, who made all those movies in the 80s, Ferris Bueller, all the Breakfast Club and all the others. He died in 2009. In 2018, she bought this lakefront property in Lake Forest. They had lived in Lake Forest previously. She paid about $12 million for a beautiful house on the lake. Pool out back, big beach, giant mansion, and then she died less than 2 years after buying it. It came on the market this summer at $15 million. We are having such a run, you and I have talked about, we're having such a run of high-end sales, but this one was really remarkable even so, because it went under contract in about a week. That was in September, and then the sale closed last week at $12.9 million. So she was asking $15. She got, her estate was asking $15 million. Her heirs were asking $15 million. They got $12.9 million. She had paid $12 million for it just a few years before. Really remarkable. It's the sixth property this year in the Chicago area to sell for $12 million or more. In the previous 3 years, we had three.
Who's bought it?
Don't know yet. The name is not in the records. The name may not end up in the records, but I will be watching. So will my competition at the Tribune. This is something we always try to come back to over the course of weeks or months. Who is the person who bought that?
And there's a lot of people with that kind of money. I mean, maybe it's nothing so... It's not Taylor Swift, who's also in the real estate news this week, but I mean, it just could be a successful family that has a lot of money, huh?
It could. You know, we don't know in a lot of these cases who ends up being the buyer because they buy through a trust or in some other way they conceal their name from view, but we have had so many of these sales. Just down the river here, a Trump condo sold for $20 million. This year, in the other direction from us, one in the St. Regis sold for about the same price.
Really?
We've had some very high-end sales.
I knew about the St. Regis one. I didn't know Trump Tower. Somebody paid $20 million for a condo in the Trump Tower?
For the unfinished penthouse. It was sold years ago, unfinished, resold, unfinished.
Really?
Yeah. So we've
just
had some
there.
Very high-end sales.
It's one of the most beautiful buildings in America, the Trump Tower. It's the perfect location.
I agree 100%. I think you take the name off, and everybody in Chicago would agree with
you. I'm surprised anybody paid $20 million for that reason. That's just, maybe they support the president, but it's hard to imagine buying that kind of real estate in this town without it making some sort of statement. It's a tacit endorsement in a way.
Well, there was a period of a few years where it was far more difficult to sell there, but many of the buyers I spoke to said that they either supported Donald Trump or were neither.
Sufficiently indifferent that it didn't matter.
It is true that the name hangs on the building, but it also is a spectacularly beautiful spot.
Sure, and you only need one buyer, right?
Right.
So whatever the politics are, as long as one person out there with a lot of money wants that piece of property, and it was exclusive. You know what I like about the Hughes place in Lake Forest that sold for about $13 million? Your description, it has an outdoor beach and a private swath of Lake Michigan, as well as a four-passenger tram to get down to the water from the bluff top home.
Yeah, remember,
I want a four-passenger tram.
You know, don't forget, as you go north up the North Shore, the bluff gets higher. And by Lake Forest, Lake Bluff, it's the highest. And there are a lot of houses up there. I've seen them in Glencoe and in Lake Forest where they have a little tram, and it's an awful lot of fun. I didn't see this one. I haven't been onto this property.
48 seconds left. Any other real estate news you want to pass along?
Well, I think one of the things that I have been watching this year, and we're coming toward the end of the year, is that upper-end sales. So, you know, interest rates have cut price sales dramatically. People who are affected by interest rates have, in many cases, pulled right out of the market. But if I'm wealthy and I'm not worried about interest rates, I have continued to buy. In the 5 years prior to the pandemic, the average number of $4 million and up home sales was 51. In 2021, it went up to 101, and so far this year, we're at 129, compared to a long-time average of 51 sales a year. This is more like the Lake Forest house. High-end people just keep buying.
So not everybody's leaving Chicago. I'll take that. Dennis Rodkin, always nice to see you.
Thanks, John.